This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning to you and good morning, world, here on WGN Radio Chicago. Time for our weekly get-together on the Saturday Morning Show. In the middle of a lot of activity, we have the Commodity Festival still underway. We have county fairs still underway. We have state fairs still underway. And the farm machinery shows coming up between now and the end of this month. A week from today, Max and I will be in Rantoul, Illinois, for the Half Century of Progress show. That event gets underway on Thursday of this week, and it'll go through next Sunday. But on Saturday, a week from today, we'll be there on stage at 3 o'clock in the afternoon with a show that has built itself into a tremendous showing of how it used to be in the olden days, farming and ranching. Half Century of Progress show. We'll talk more about that a little bit later. And, of course, with the ending of the Illinois State Fair, we then get ready to unveil the DuCoin State Fair. That will open on August 25th, next Friday, that the DuCoin State Fair gets underway in southern Illinois, and it'll continue through the Labor Day weekend. Farmers markets, of course, still underway. Coming into their prime now is more of the crops that are produced in this part of the country are coming to a farmer's market near you. So we hope you'll enjoy the fresh produce picked early this morning that'll be coming into Saturday farmers markets across the Midwest. Good to have you with us here on the Saturday Morning Show. We're going to check in with a couple of events at the Illinois State Fair. And we have the opportunity, as we do every year, to visit with folks from the CME group, including Tim Andreessen. And we'll share that visit with you when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Tim Andreessen with the CME group. A year ago at the Illinois State Fair, we were talking about concern over the cattle contract at the CME. What's happened in the last year?
You know, in the last year, I think the cattle market has gotten much better. We've spent a lot of time interacting with the cattle industry. We've made some changes to the contract in terms of yield, in terms of some discount at some delivery locations. And I think the response to that has been very positive. This year, we had a very high level of usage of the contract by the commercials. 67% of the crop was hedged. Which is, I don't know if it's a record, but it's pretty high up there. And we've gotten a lot of good feedback.
We have seen a pretty good volume of trade in the options markets and the futures markets. You see that continuing to grow?
I do. You know, risk management is becoming more and more important for the producer. And we've seen a tremendous amount of growth. This year, for the first time, we had a day where we traded over 1 million contracts of corn. We've seen significant growth in the Kansas City wheat contract. As you know, there's a lot going on in the wheat world, and you know, premium wheat has been an issue, and Kansas City wheat is the high-pro wheat that you know, we offer a product on.
One of the basics we can't get away from in the market is weather. Continues to be very important, isn't it?
Yeah, and this year has been a tricky year, I got to tell you. You know, you usually have a very defined pattern. Seems to me like it's usually around 4th of July. This year, we saw a lot of weather. You know, I drove late this spring, I drove the length of the state of Illinois. I'd never seen so much water in the fields. But, you know, people don't respond to too much moisture. Out west, we've certainly got a lot of dryness, and we've certainly got a lot of response in the marketplace.
Well, the saying that we've had for years, rain makes grain, still kind of holds true, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And, you know, today, hybrids are more yield, drought-resistant than ever. They maintain their yields. You know, it's not like it was 20 years ago.
Let's talk international markets for a moment, because when I came to Chicago, it was the butter and egg market, the mercantile exchange, and the grain market at the Board of Trade. How far beyond that has we gone?
Well, I mean, our products are very much used globally as risk management products, as in benchmarks. If you go anywhere from, you know, the Black Sea to Nebraska, you're going to have people that are using corn as the basis, corn futures as the basis of what they price against. But we've also seen a need, particularly in things like wheat, where there's regional variances, to launch new products. A couple weeks back, we launched a new Australian wheat contract, FOB vessel for Australia, and we're looking at other regions in the world where there's a need to have effective regional risk management products.
How active are the Chinese in U.S. markets?
It's really hard to tell, you know, what they are doing, but clearly if you look at the news, in the last few years they've acquired Noble, they've acquired Nidera, both who have, you know, operations in the United States. I think, you know, you're seeing a globalization of the marketplace. You're seeing more and more people from around the world participate in our markets, as well as you're seeing us participate in other markets.
How concerned are markets? I know a lot of producers are concerned, but the market's concerned about renegotiating NAFTA. Would you play an active role in getting your viewpoints heard?
Well, look, I don't know that that's something that fits in our wheelhouse. I think it's very, very important to agricultural overall. And I think those are the kind of things that if you look at the, you know, National Corn Growers, American Soybean Association, and the National Grain and Feed, I think they're going to be the ones that are going to be predominantly on the front foot around things like trade.
South American growers still a very important part of the production picture?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Ori, I'm going to date myself. I can remember when South America produced 15 million metric tons of soybeans, the whole continent. And obviously, it's become a bigger and bigger thing every year. And, you know, like producers here, though, they have their ups, they have their downs, they have the need to manage the risk just the same as, you know, the soybean producer does here.
And one other question that's a little off base, but back in the 70s when gasohol made its appearance on the market, I could never have envisioned that we would end up being an exporter of fuel.
No, it's amazing what has happened in terms of technology and certainly, you know, if you think of energy overall, if you know, there's a saying in the markets that the, you know, that the cure for high prices is high prices. When you get crude oil over $100 a barrel, all of a sudden you find ways to generate energy. And you know, the impact of that on our ability to produce energy as a country has been tremendous.
Finally, we are at the Illinois State Fair, but that's not the only state fair that CME Group takes part in. But what are you doing for young people to prepare them for the business of agriculture?
Well, there's a lot of things. We feel really strongly that we have to help work with the next generation of agriculture. Behind us is the Commodity Carnival. It's a game we've had now at, I think it's been for 5 years, at various state fairs. This year we're at 120 fairs, in nine states, where we're teaching kids about production agriculture and about some of the risks and challenges of, you know, of raising cattle. You know, particularly, I mean, there's a lot of farm kids here, but particularly a lot of the kids in the city, they don't understand where food comes from. They don't understand the risk that a farmer has to take on, you know, to raise an animal or to grow a crop. And we think it's important for them to help understand that sort of thing. The other thing is we're very active in terms of providing scholarships. Yeah. So today, you know, we're here at the auction, and anybody, we're going to provide a scholarship, a $5,000 scholarship for every young man or woman who had a grand champion. And this year we're also providing scholarships for the winners of the Skillathon.
Indeed, scholarships galore. Well, I shouldn't say galore, but a lot of scholarships being made available to young students of agriculture. And later on Tuesday at the Governor's Sale of Grand Champions, CME Group paid $25,000 for the Grand Champion Barrow at the Illinois State Fair. You know how I feel about the leadership building activities of 4-H clubs and FFA chapters across the country. That's why I was delighted with an event that took place on opening day at the Illinois State Fair, one that will benefit 4-H club members across the nation. And we're going to learn more about that from the Illinois Director of 4-H when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Lisa Diaz is the Director of 4-H in the state of Illinois. And we're here at the Illinois State Fair. We're on opening day. Something happened to 4-H that will impact 4-H'ers across the nation. What happened?
Well, we were very excited to be hosting the announcement of a major philanthropic gift to National 4-H. It's going to change how we think about preparing young people for the future. Google has announced that Illinois in 4-H, along with 22 other states in the nation, will be receiving $1.5 million to create a brand new pathway, career pathway for young people into computer science in new technology fields.
Well, I know you just received it, but what are you expecting for 4-H members because of this grant?
Well, here in Illinois, and it already happened at the fair on Friday, we had our Googlers here. We've already started training young people to be the up-and-coming Googlers. They're helping to introduce technologies like virtual reality. So we'll be using drone technology to take aerial footage, as well as our other kinds of video that can be put together in creating virtual reality 3D experiences for anyone and our youth. And this is really important to the partnership with Google and 4-H, is that we see young people not just as consumers of technology, they love their video games and their YouTube, but we know that these are the creators of tomorrow's technology. So with this partnership with Google, we'll be creating opportunities for kids to learn how to program things like virtual reality experiences to teach people about any number of things.
Is this the first such grant to 4-H, and will there be more in different areas, do you think?
You know, 4-H has gotten the attention of an increasing number of corporate donors who recognize that we really play a unique role in preparing young people for the future. We've been around for over 100 years. We're represented in every county and every community of the nation. We're administered through a network of higher ed institutions, land grant institutions. We have a history of youth leadership that excels, with kids serving in leadership roles at the club level, county, state, national, international. 4-H is in 40 countries around the world. So they're recognizing the excellence that comes out of this program and the reach that we have around the country.
And for urban families who at one time thought 4-H was cows, corn, pigs, and soybeans, that has changed dramatically.
It has changed. And what I like to remind people that have known 4-H and those historical roots, we are all that. Today we're celebrating Ag Day here at State Fair, and the excellence of the many, many families who have made 4-H part of their way of life and raised their kids in 4-H. This weekend I was celebrating leaders in 4-H who've been around for 50 years, who have been serving the organization. We had a 69-year 4-H leader. So we have those families, and that's an important part of 4-H. And we are so much more. We have robotics, we have filmmaking, we have computer science, new drone technology. So we like to tell people that 4-H is that organization you can depend on to have strong roots in what feeds our country and our nation, and is also changing with the times so that the cutting edge technology learning opportunities can happen in 4-H. It's a place for everybody.
Indeed, it is a place for everybody, but it has changed a great deal, and I think that helps a lot of young people learn skills that will help them later in life. Earlier on the program, we were talking to Tim Andreessen about the international scope of U.S. markets. An interesting announcement this week from Bloomington, Illinois. COFCO International Limited, that's a Chinese group, and Growmark, announced the creation of a new grain partnership, bringing together the Farmer Cooperative Network of Growmark with the global trading power of COFCO International Limited. The reason to develop an extensive supply chain directly linking the farmers from the richest food production areas of North America to the global feed and food industry, including its largest demand market, China. Now, the partnership includes joint ownership and operation of the barge, truck, and rail terminal at Cahokia, Illinois, frontage on the Mississippi River for barge loading, as well as a grain origination agreement. And Growmark will staff a grain merchandiser in CIL St. Louis office to originate grain and service patron accounts. Again, we go further and further into a global agriculture and a global economy. And then one of the other fun things that I've been fortunate enough to be involved in since back in 1984 when I bought the Cessna 210 Turbo, flying and getting a good look at fields across Illinois and the Midwest from the air. But along with that, 20 years ago, some dreamers in Poplar Grove, Illinois, just north of Belvedere, said, you know, we should have a transportation museum focused on airplanes and old automobiles. Well, those dreamers did more than dream. They made it happen. And tomorrow, the 20th anniversary celebration of the Poplar Grove Vintage Wings and Wheels Museum takes place from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. with a lot of activities. If you've not taken a look at this Air Auto Museum, this would be a good time to do it. Tomorrow, as they celebrate the 20th anniversary, a lot of dreamers that did a lot of hard work to make it all happen. Well, another dreamer is with us every week to provide us with news and weather and sports, and we're about at that time. Coming up next on Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com, where it's 25 minutes before 6 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, unusually cool morning for the month of August. And so far, we have seen that across the Midwest. Very comfortable for outdoor activities, but maybe crops could take a little more heat right now to finish the maturing process. Right now, we say welcome to the Samuelson Says portion of the Saturday morning show. It's brought to you every week by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson this morning looking at what? No politics in agriculture? Well, after reading through the emails responding to my Samuelson Says a few weeks ago that some of you decided were very political, they certainly weren't on my part, but I learned decades ago in this broadcast business that you very often hear what you want to hear and not what we actually say. So after going through those emails that said, Orion, you are dumber than a rock, you know about agriculture, but stay out of politics. But I was surprised by two or three emails from people who made their criticism and then said, there is no such thing as politics in agriculture. Well, now, wait a minute. There indeed are politics in the world of agriculture. Take this year, for example, the writing of the new farm bill has to be done by the end of this session in Congress. Hearings are being held around the country by members of the House and Senate Ag Committee groups. Later this month, on August 30th, the Secretary of Agriculture, Sonny Perdue, will visit the Farm Progress Show in Decatur, Illinois, to get input, because the farm bill is a political issue. Producers of food and fiber have to live in the political world, and that's why you need to be involved. You need to let your feelings be known, your desires to be known, and we're getting some of that It'll be interesting to find out from Secretary Perdue if he's getting enough feedback and if the comments are helpful. But back to the comment that there's no such thing as politics in agriculture. And the Samuelson says of a few weeks ago, I asked your answers to a couple of questions. One of them was when the hearings on did Russia interfere in the election or not, and we get the findings, what do we do with them? If they did indeed, then do we throw President Putin in Guantanamo Bay in prison, or do we sue the Russian government for damages? I don't know. I don't know what, if anything, we can do. But the politics in agriculture issue has been and always will be very important to the people on Capitol Hill, but even more important to the people in the countryside who produce food, fiber, and energy. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. 20 minutes before 6 o'clock, coming up, a discussion of markets. And Max Armstrong, who wants to go back to a couple of weeks ago and discuss one more time that August crop report. He'll do that with his guest when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. 17 minutes before 6 o'clock, and Max, what was that subject you wanted to revisit this week?
Let's just talk once more about that August crop report that came out a few days ago. Have you ever seen a crop number that was so unbelievable to growers? Have you ever heard so many producers say, this is crazy, this can't even be close?
Yeah, I have not. I've seen it happen in October when they have more data to make a more confident decision, because then they'll be harvesting some plots, they'll be counting, you know, counting kernels, they'll be counting rows, they'll be weighing the ears instead of just using statistical data. So I guess based on how they've always done these surveys, talking to farmers, now we have internet, and of course they physically talk to people and ask them, and then their own observations, and they go to farmers and they look at the plot, and they'll go out there and mark off a spot and look at it and say, this is what we think it is, and now when you harvest it, you tell me what you received for yield, and then you compare it. And I was involved in that years ago, and I was astonished at how good they were so early in the year. I think they missed my yield by 4 bushels an acre. So, and this was probably in August, and then when I combined in October, they verify it again, you know. But this time, I don't know what we're to believe or what we are supposed to use in order to manage risk, I guess, of what's coming. But when the crop ratings fall, and we all saw that happening, and we know the crop is late and replant and all this, yet we come up with these numbers. These tech seeds are way beyond our what I thought they were. And I guess the fear that I have is that if we would grow 170 bushel corn this year and 50 bushel beans, given the conditions we have, when will we ever grow one to reduce production supply?
How often do they change the September number significantly from the August crop report? In other words, is it going to be pretty close when it comes out?
That's what they say. And however, they'll use a five-year average. They'll use in the last 2 years, they missed it by a percent. But I don't recall us having years like this where we've had the weather situation we've had and the unknown. Plus, you had an economic incentive starting in last fall, really, to where you would think we'd have planted more soybeans than we did, and yet that hasn't come to fruition yet, but that will when we file all our 578s reports to the government. But there's some economic conditions that some people didn't use spray for their fungicide, and maybe they didn't put on as much P and K as they would have otherwise. We see that in some of the fertilizer reports. So is that going to come back to haunt us in here somewhere? And things look good, and yet we've already reduced, you know, Iowa yields. We know they're going to be down. Illinois is not what it was last year. So we've taken some of those core states down, but the media seems to be concentrating on the fact that the South has such an unbelievable crop. They're up 20 bushels an acre from last year. Well, they produce 5 million acres. There's not as significant as South Dakota, perhaps.
Right.
So 20 bushels is 100 million bushels. That's you spill that much, you know, going to harvest probably. So. But that helped, you know, but I don't think it's I'm still kind of baffled, and I still suspect that that yield may come down in corn when we finally harvest it. Soybeans are still a wild card. You know how they are. We've got time yet to make or break that crop.
While we're talking about crops and crop conditions, zero in on Iowa with me for just a moment with that corn crop. I mean, I was in that pocket in northwest Iowa last weekend, Albert City, Pocahontas, Storm Lake, and they have really had an intense drought there. Conversely, I talked to folks from northeast Iowa, not exactly the big producing counties of Iowa, but they're in the land of milk and honey. However, you go on up into Minnesota, you know, into big counties, and there the crop looks very good. So help me understand what's happened to the Iowa corn crop. Will that yield climb, perhaps?
I think it's over in those areas that were bad. I've looked at the corn and
moisture's too late to help them.
A lot of them are, the ears are fired. The stalks are fired. The leaves up to the ear. And picking some of the cobs, you'll see where it wasn't just tip back; it was poor pollination. And I think a lot of them are looking at 28 long kernels and 16 around, perhaps. But whatever, I think it's pretty hard to bring that back. You know, we always think, well, rain in the middle of August will help beans. Rain might sustain that corn crop from dropping another 10 bushels an acre or whatever. But some of our clients who've got an APH over 200 bushels an acre have had yield checks by agronomists of 150 bushels an acre. And they may be off by 20, but even 170 is, you look at the crop, and I know what 170 bushel corn looks like, and that's not it. So that's 50 bushels less than last year in that vein through northwest Iowa to southeast. But we're reflecting that in the total yield in Iowa. And I have to keep reminding myself daily, almost under times of strife, that an average yield, trend line yield, is some good and some bad. Well, you hear about the bad, but there is some good corn, like you say. And but we're starting to see some yields come in parts of Illinois that were marginal and test plots, and they're running 20 to 30 bushels less than last year. And yet the USDA, you look at what they pegged in for Illinois, it's down from last year. We've already, you wonder how much worse it could get. So it has to come in test weight. We don't know what the ear weights are anywhere yet. And that could be a big deal, because if you go back to 2013 actual test weights that they didn't back into, but they weren't implied, but what they were actually, you could see a 7 or 8% drop in test weight nationally. And you know, that's a chunk. That's like taking the yield down from maybe down another 5 or 6 bushels back down to where we thought it was to begin with.
Before I leave this topic of the August crop report, were the expectations built so strongly among farmers by all of these? And you say we always think about the bad.
Yeah.
And looking at all of those social media photos circulating around out there about lousy crops and farmers pushing those around, it reminds me of the coffee shops back in the mid-'80s.
Right.
And, you know, can you top this bad news?
Yeah.
That was always what was going on then.
Yeah.
So the expectations were built so strongly going into this report.
Yeah, and they were in the grains to some point. We saw the weather kind of changing in the first week after the 4th of July. We topped the corn market at the time that it looked the worst. You know, if you go back and look at the media hype, the internet and so forth, that was when things looked the worst. And boy, if it never rains again, we'll be lucky to get 100 bushels. Well, then it started to change. The heat was over. We started getting some rains. As my friend tells me, that the dry areas were getting smaller and the wet areas were getting bigger. So you stop that. And we didn't go to $4.50 like we did last year, but we had 500 million bushels more carried in, left over. So that would tell you that under a similar circumstance of psychologically believing that we got a problem here, we shouldn't have gotten to 450. We topped out about 417, and that was difficult to sell at that level. But I remember telling my clients, you know, get your selling attitude on. We're going to have to price some grain pretty quick. And boy, I got taken to the woodshed. You know, well, if you're bearish corn, come look at my farm. You know, and of course, it's very difficult for a farmer to sell a poor crop. But there's nothing worse than having 150 bushel corn at 380 or 360, and not selling at $4. It's a difficult year this year for everybody. And I think we did not need this year in agriculture. There'll be some sections of the country that, you know, aren't going to have a crop. You know, and Mother Nature is no respecter of persons, and so it will be interesting to see how it all boils out at the end.
how much old crop corn is still sitting around in bins ahead of the arrival of this new crop?
Well, I would say if we don't get it to market by September 1st, it's probably not coming because you'll start harvesting. We're harvesting already down south, but you know, there's preparation time, and we'll harvest in October. So most of us, if we had to clear the bins out, we had to get it going and get it done by September 1. And if we had a DP contract, a delayed pricing from last fall, we paid them for the privilege of waiting for the price to go down. Now we have to make that decision on September 1st in a commercial storage, or you pay a minimum storage to store it till February 1st. So there's some decisions that made, and that's probably why in the past few years, the warnings of us having a terrible time with prices at the end of the year didn't materialize, because we kind of bottomed the markets on September 1. Not so sure as we do that this year with such an influx of not just corn from here, but in South America that will continue to fall, haunt us maybe during our harvest time.
So that corn is still coming to market out of the Southern Hemisphere.
Yeah, oh yeah, it will be. There's quite a bit of corn left. And in fact, Brazil is even thinking about now of building, or they have built, I believe in the process, a private concern that's going to use corn only for ethanol, not sugar. And it's inefficient compared to sugar, but the comment was, we've got to do something about our surplus. So in all that, we're building demand, and which is silently under there, and we look at that every year. Demand keeps going up. You know, we use about 200 or 300 million bushels or 500 million bushels, a 500 million bushels of corn more globally every year than we do the previous year, and that
continues.
That's
the silver lining out there somewhere.
Yeah. One of these days, you know, we're going to produce a subpar crop that's still going to look good, and someone's going to say, "Well, why are we at $4.5 or $5 a bushel when we've got 2 billion bushels left over?" It's because the rest of the world is in need of the grain, and beans are probably the most exciting one, because we need to continue to increase acres globally just to keep up with the way I calculate about a 5 million acre equivalent at 50 bushels an acre increase that we've seen grow over the years, and it's not just China. Just about every country out of hundreds of countries, perhaps, but say the top 100 have increased the demand, their personal demand, for not only what they grow themselves, but what they buy to supplement. Everybody grows something, but they have to import. So
many of those are Southeast Asian nations,
yes,
right?
And they're just kind of coming on, you know. Vietnam's one of them, you know, Indonesia, and then, of course, we don't talk much about India, but they grow soybeans. And so it's not all about China. So it's the good news is that a global economy didn't melt down like we thought, irregardless of who's in office and what dictator is where. We're still improving the demand globally, and that's good. That's good for the economy. At least we don't have to worry about inflation and food just yet.
His name is Jerry Gulke with the Gulke Group, based in Hinsdale, Illinois, but Jerry also is involved in farming in North Dakota. We turn to him rather often to get his market thinking at this time of the year, particularly Jerry Gulke. Coming up to 5 minutes before 6 o'clock news time, and we'll have just a little more for you when we continue on the Saturday morning show. 3 minutes before news time here on WGN Radio, 64 degrees, a rather cool morning in August here across the Midwest. Let me again go over some of the dates of events that you may want to attend over the next month or so. First of all, next week, getting underway on the 23rd, the Bureau County Fair at Princeton, the Will County Fair at Piatone, and getting underway the 25th, the DuQuoin State Fair in DuQuoin, Illinois. Then, of course, starting next Thursday at Rantoul, Illinois, the Half Century of Progress show, that runs into Sunday. And then they take Monday to travel from Rantoul to Decatur for the opening of the Farm Progress Show. Farm Progress Show at Decatur, that's the 29th, the 30th, and the 31st. And on the 30th, another hearing will be held. This one will feature Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue, who will conduct a Farm Bill hearing at 9 o'clock in the morning on August 30th, so make note of that. And the Secretary is also traveling this weekend. On Monday, he will be in South Carolina and conducting another hearing bill on the Farm Bill. and he will be meeting with the South Carolina Commissioner of Agriculture, Hugh Weathers, farmers, agribusiness leaders, and he will tour the U.S. Vegetable Lab in Charleston. That's in South Carolina on Monday. Oh, and then in the afternoon, he'll watch the solar eclipse with school children from schools in the area, as well as professors from the university. So a busy time for Secretary of Agriculture Perdue. And then going beyond Farm Progress Show, yeah, the Sandwich Fair always opens the Wednesday after Labor Day. Max Armstrong will be there on opening day, Wednesday. I'll be there on Thursday. And at the Farm Progress Show every day at noon, you'll find Max and me on stage in the ADM tent. We hope you'll stop by and say hello. And in the morning at 10 o'clock, I'll be at the University of Illinois tent talking to market specialists, researchers, and other people involved in the College of ACES at the University of Illinois. Oh, and the ACES Salute to Agriculture, Saturday, September 9. Make your reservations now. And that's our time for this Saturday morning. Good to be with you as always. And thanks to Bob Ferguson for hitting the switches and everything to make this all happen on Chicago's very own 720 WGN and WGNradio.com.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.